Hello, everybody, and welcome to Minute 111 of Season 5 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1990 Bruce Willis action flick Die Hard 2, Die Harder, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me today is Bubbleweed from It's Time to Rewind. Welcome back to the show, Bubba.
Hey, it's good to be here. I'm excited to get a chance to talk about this.
Yeah, movie. Well, I mean, today's minute we don't have that much dialogue. We have typical John McClane dialogue. That's what we have. You know, there's really no conversations, but it still works.
I mean, some would argue that this is the best line of the movie.
That is correct. That is correct. So, minute 111 begins with Esperanza getting ready to take off. And ends with John screaming for joy. So yesterday, on Friday, we ended things by John basically getting kicked off the wing of the airplane, falling to the ground, and being quite happy that, you know, gas prices are going up. Esperanza is continuing to fly. I mean, you notice that nobody really cares that Major Grant is gone. You know, they just move along. That's it. He's been, you know, chopped up by the engine, but we don't really care. We're just moving forward. I guess they look at it that they split the reward money. You know, they each get more. Their shares are a little higher. You know, even all the guys in blue light, none of them say anything about the fact that, you know, their commander just got killed, or he didn't come back in the plane with Stewart. I guess you can look at it from that perspective. So, I don't know. So, Esperanza continues to speed up the plane and gets ready for lifting off. And then we get a shot of John lying on the ground, flat on his back, just watching the plane go away, move farther and farther away. And then they give us a shot of all this spurting gas out of the wing, which we talked a little bit about this last week. I don't know how realistic that is. I mean, I'm not an aviator at all. But I would think that would be a major flaw if you just open the valve and gas starts flowing out, as opposed to having to do something beyond that.
Yeah, it makes it look like it's pressurized in there. You got water pressure. It's not just, it looks like it's more than just dripping out through gravity.
Correct. But my point is that I don't think that they would make planes this way that, okay, we have to refill the plane. So how do you make sure when you open the valve, in order to even put the pump in, that you're not going to have all this gas spurting out onto you? If that's what happens when you open the valve, unless
if it wasn't the valve labeled like emergency dump valve, like if you have to dump the fuel.
Okay, maybe. It's possible. Did it say emergency valve? I'm trying to remember if it said emergency valve or not.
But then again, I don't remember if it said emergency valve, but I do think that it said like dump, you know, fuel dump.
Right. But again, it goes back to the fact that, you know, it just seems like that is not the right way that one would make a plane. you'd have a little more safety, even if you need to dump it. That there, maybe you had to do something else in order. Maybe there's like a button there in order to stop it, or like, okay, right now you're dumping. How do you stop it? Okay,
you don't want to dump
all of the. You don't want to dump all of it.
Well, if
and then you get gassed all over yourself.
I mean, if there was something wrong with the gas, like they had to dump it in order to get an empty tank, but I don't know. I know nothing about fueling passenger airplanes.
No, neither do I. I'm just guessing, and it just doesn't make any sense to me. You know, I mean, it's great. It's great for the plot of the movie. That works. You know, we'll find some more flaws along the way with that. But, you know, anyone out there who knows anything about planes and knows if this really is what happens when you open this emergency dump valve, let us know. You know, it'd be very interesting to know whether that how that works or not. And then after we see all this spurting, we see John just lying casually on the ground, you know, propping himself up with one elbow, taking out his lighter, you know, starts playing with his lighter. Do you think that's still Tony's lighter?
I missed, like, I just assumed that it was McClane's lighter because if he got it from somebody else, I must have missed that whenever I watched the movie.
No, I'm talking about from Die Hard 1.
Oh, from Die Hard 1. I mean, we see that John is a smoker, so I imagine that it's probably his lighter.
Right, because he took a lighter off of Tony. Tony was the first guy he killed in the first movie, Carl's brother. When he was going through his knapsack, he took out a lighter, and European cigarettes. So I wonder if he keeps that as a memento.
I mean, it's especially like the way this movie is set up, because they have a lot of just random callbacks to the first movie. That's I could definitely see that would be something that, except that the movie doesn't really focus on it, but just the fact that he has it, I could see that connection.
Right. Okay. No, it got me thinking when I was watching this, doing my research on it, and I saw that he took out the lighter, and I'm like, I wonder if it's the same lighter, or if it's supposed to be the same lighter. Probably prop wise, it's not, but who knows? And then he lights the lighter, make sure that it stays lit. Which I mean, I do Zippos stay lit like that?
Yeah,
They.
because they have the, it's like a
They had the wind
candle type
resistance, right?
situation. It has the liquid lighter fuel reservoir inside. It's usually cotton filled, and then they have the wick, and so it works kind of like a candle, where it has the lighter fuel reservoir, and then the lighter fuel feeds through the wick, and that's what burns. And so Zippos can tend to burn for a while,
Okay. All right, so the
and then
he
you extinguish it by closing the
Right, by
by
closing
closing
it.
the lid, which extinguishes it.
Right. And then John just takes this lighter and just throws it onto the ground. And then, it lights up. Now, I mean, I gotta say, it's a great coincidence, the fact that he happens to land exactly where the stream of gas ends, so that he can throw the lighter on it. Because if he's lying over part of it, so it would go the other way also.
Yeah, I feel like it should have gone the other way, because he dumped the valve, and then he
And then he jumped up.
got knocked off,
That's right.
and he rolled forward. So yeah, there should have been a good
Correct.
maybe 50 feet of jet fuel going the other way as well.
And if John is sitting right there, it should have lit up and taken him off also. And as he throws the lighter down, he says his catchphrase, "Yippee-ki-yay, mother!" Then we see it light up, and it's great the way that it lights up like that. It looks like it's something that they do a lot in movies, where someone will light something, and you'll see the stream of the flame, go across the screen with the way that they do it. And they actually do it really well here, because they follow the stream a little bit, and we see all the different like sparks flying on the ground, and then we see it on the runway, basically chasing after the airplane. So I it,
I think it looks like a pretty good, it looks like a decent composite shot, but at the same time, like my eyes, I could look at it and I see that looks like a composite shot.
Right, it could be. It definitely can be. And it just chases after, and then we get a shot of Esperanza determined, and he starts lifting up the throttle so that the plane will start lifting up. Then we get a shot of Stewart, also very confident right now, and you can see Miller in the background. And then they give us a shot of the guys inside of the passenger area of the plane, and there's a total of 12 of them that are sitting here, six on each side.
And you can see some of them are wearing white,
That's right.
showing that they're from the special ops team. And then
Well,
several of them are wearing
the guys
camo.
in camo are also from Blue Light. The only guy here who isn't from Blue Light is Khan. He's the guy with the brown vest. Khan and Miller are the only two guys of Stewart's men that survived up until now. So all the other guys are the guys from Blue Light. You can even see the guys in the white. Underneath, they have camo on. So just some of them kept on the white, and some of them kept on the camo.
Oh, I see.
And what's really funny is you see a shot of Khan actually putting on his seatbelt. You know, because he obviously doesn't know what's about to happen when he doesn't really need a seatbelt.
I also like the guy that we see blowing the smoke ring.
That's right, the smoke ring. That was actually something I wanted to talk about. You brought up a good thing about the smoke ring. So, what is first of all, have you ever smoked? Have you done smoke rings or not?
Yeah. I couldn't do them consistently, but I have been able to do a smoke ring. Like I smoked for just a few years, like literally right before it was legal for me to smoke. Like whenever I was in high school, you know, I smoked as a teenager, like whenever I was, you know, probably 16 to 18. And then whenever I turned 18, I bought one legal pack of cigarettes. And then I kind of, you know, my friend group moved away from my friends that actively smoked. And then like, I was always just a social smoker.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Like I never really, I only smoked whenever I was around my friends that smoked. And then, you know, after I turned 18, started going to college, I wasn't hanging out with people that smoked anymore. So I had no reason to smoke. So I quit.
Okay. All right, that's very commendable. I mean, I've never smoked, so I have no idea. I only know from movies that you can make you know, these smoke rings, or even if you're looking at the Lord of the Rings, and then you can, you know, make not just smoke rings, you can make you know, ships that will fly through them and stuff like that. You know, but that's Gandalf. Mm-hmm. What can you do? Now, do you know?
But I do also like kind of remember the science behind it too.
You do?
To a certain extent.
Okay, yeah. Please explain it to me then.
Or I mean, not exactly the science, but I know the you know, a way to consistently do it. Like there's a way, like I've seen it done with, like in a science class experiment, where you can have like this a bucket with a small hole in one end, and then like the other end is open, but then you have like a piece of plastic with a rubber band, and then you can fill this container with smoke, and then if you tap on the plastic on one end, then it'll come out as a smoke ring.
Oh wow, that's actually really cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So a smoke ring is a visible vortex ring formed by smoke in a clear atmosphere. Smokers may blow smoke rings from their mouth intentionally or accidentally, and smoke rings may also be formed by sudden bursts of fire, such as lightning and immediately putting out a cigarette lighter, or by shaking a smoke source, such as an incense stick, or by firing certain types of artillery. Sometimes they also have special devices which are called vortex ring guns and vortex ring toys. And basically, a mushroom cloud mm-hmm. is a form of a large smoke ring. Okay, a smoke ring is commonly formed when a puff of smoke is suddenly injected into clean air, especially through a narrow opening, which is basically what you just described beforehand. The outer parts of the puff are slowed by the still air relative to the central part, imparting it the characteristic flow pattern. The smoke ring makes the ring visible, but does not significantly affect the flow. So the same phenomenon can occur with any fluid, which can produce vortex rings, which are invisible, but otherwise entirely similar to smoke rings. So basically the way that you do it is you take smoke into your mouth and you expel it with a tongue flick by closing the jaw, tapping the cheek, or producing a sudden burst of air with the lungs and throat. The smoker may also use any of these methods to blow into a cloud of smoke outside of their mouth. And I mean, they say that even volcanoes can create vapor rings, these type of things. I even saw mm-hmm. some pictures. They actually look really cool. These vortex rings of steam and gas that you can have. So yeah, I thought that was really cool. But you can do it also from a cigarette. It doesn't just need to be a cigar, right?
Yeah, just in anything with smoke. I'm sure you can do it with a vape cloud as well.
Yeah, probably. And then we get a frontal shot of the plane coming towards us, getting ready to take off. And, you know, you see in the background the fire trail trying to catch up. And as the plane lifts off, the flame jumps up from the ground, which, again, is such a cool effect to show. how it just jumps up and engulfs the engine, which explodes. And as the engine explodes, we see Esperanza looking to his left, and then they give us a shot, just a fraction of a frame of the soldiers looking to their left, and then we see the wing exploding even more, and then they show us flames, coming up through the cargo area. And then we see a picture of Miller, who realizes that something's wrong. And then we see a picture of Stuart looking back with a little bit scared look on his face. Esperanza, also same thing, very concerned. And then you have to really you have to watch this in slow motion, but you can see six of the soldiers basically screaming as the light engulfs them. You know, they don't have they don't have flames engulfing them. It's just you see this bright light. I guess it's a great way of just showing what's going on. We get a few more frames of the soldiers as they're all screaming, and then it goes back to Esperanza again, and then they give us once again the wing exploding. So the wing exploded three times, just in different places, I guess. And then right after that, we have the entire plane just imploding and just thinking of. And I mean, again, this is just great effects work, especially given the fact that at the time, and Randy Harlan talks about this on the commentary, they just used practical effects here. You didn't have to worry about them using special effects or digital effects for any of these things. And then we get a shot of John still looking on, on the ground at everything going on, and a bright light appears around him, and he basically shirks back. And then we basically see the entire plane once again exploding into many different little pieces. And John just starts laughing, and he goes, "Oh, fuck," as he's laughing. he's enjoying himself. I think he's partially shocked that it worked.
Yeah, it's that cathartic. Yeah, it's that cathartic laugh of, finally everything's finished and I can relax. And it's just that release of emotion that's been, that he's been kind of repressing for this entire movie, just trying to focus on what needs to be done. And now everything is pretty much like he's done everything that he can do. And so he just sits, lays back and laughs and, just has a moment, like this moment of rest, this cathartic moment of rest and
completion. Completely. And it's great. I mean, I think he's also wondering to himself, that he's shocked about the fact that this actually worked. I'm not sure he was 100% sure that this is something that he would be able to actually accomplish. But hey,
and I know, like, me watching this, I just, like, this scene just, it made me burst out laughing just because of how ridiculously exaggerated it is. Like, I completely understand that this is, for cinematic effect, but just the way that the entire plane explodes in this giant fireball, to me, just seems a little bit, in it.
Okay. Inaccurate. I mean, that's fair, but again, we don't watch these type of movies looking just for accuracy. partially, we still want to see some accuracy, but it doesn't have to be completely accurate with everything that's going on. And obviously this is a prime example as to, whether this really works or not. I couldn't tell you. I'm not an expert on plane explosions, so I don't know. I couldn't really tell you if this is the way the plane should be exploding or not.
Yeah, I can. Yeah, and you can't really tell. You can't really say if plane fuel is flammable enough for the flame to actually catch up to a plane going at takeoff speed. And I know that's like the stream of fuel. It wouldn't be like a constant stream. It would be broken up, but at least that, I think that one can be explained away because it's not just like the liquid fuel that burns. It's the fumes, like it's the mixture of the fuel and the air And so I think from that explanation, you could say that like it is possible for the flame to climb, you know, to jump up the stream in the air, even though it's not like a solid stream of liquid. It'll be broken up.
That's true. Yeah, again, it's fun to watch.
Yeah, fantastic giant practical plane explosion.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so they do a nice job of that. And then, you know, basically we finish this minute with John continuing to laugh and screaming for joy. I'm very glad that his plan actually worked. You have anything else you want to talk about in this minute before we get into the script?
No, I think that covers it.
The truth is this minute of the script is a page and a half, and it's very descriptive of everything that's going on. I'm just going to quickly read it because it's really interesting the way that it does it. So, McLean at the edge of the runway crawls to a painful sitting position, face impassive. He watches the jet move away, and in Congress, as it seems, he lights a cigarette, looks off at the line of jet fuel running along the runway for a quarter mile now. McLean, battered like a car wreck victim, now he looks up into the dark sky, trying to find the sound of jet engines. Then he sees the lights of Holly's plane careening down in a desperate fight against gravity. McLean takes a long pull of the cigarette until the tip is red hot. Stewart stands in the open plane doorway, about to close it. He looks back and for the first time sees the jet fuel winding endlessly down the runway. McLean then says, "Hey, Colonel, happy New Year." And he throws the cigarette into the fuel. Stewart sees the flame racing towards him, turns to shout to Esperanza, "No, no, take off now." Esperanza responds to the cry, guns it. The plane starts to rise. The wheels go into the air. But as the craft rises, so does the flame, climbing the fuel ribbon right into the sky into the nearest engine, which explodes. Esperanza turns at the explosion in time for a wall of fire that shoots up from the wing and through the cockpit floor, and then he's on fire. And then Stewart is blown to little pieces as a fireball blows right out the door, taking all the remaining soldiers with it. And then the plane itself explodes, wings and tail and body going 9 different directions. McLean dives to the ground as the explosion rolls towards him. So it's very descriptive. I've been waiting 6 months since I first read the script to talk about the fact that, you know, in the script here, they didn't want to use Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker. They just wanted to say happy fucking New Year instead, which doesn't flow as well, obviously. And it wouldn't, I don't think it would have stuck as a catchphrase.
No, I don't think so either. I also, you know, we haven't talked about it, but the first time that I watched this movie was last night. I hadn't seen it before.
Seriously? Then. Oh, wow. Yeah.
But like, as I was watching this and it got to this point with him, you know, jettisoning the fuel mixture, I actually, you know, surprisingly wasn't expecting like a plane explode. Like I wasn't expecting the ring of fire. My first thought was, oh, that, you know, John Amos's character, he fell into the one engine on that side. And even though it didn't look like it got damaged, it seemed like the engine was working perfectly fine. I thought, well, maybe, so he took out that engine and now he's dumping all the fuel from the other engine. And so that's, you know, the plane running out of fuel is going to cause it to crash.
Interesting.
That was my prediction of how it was going to end.
Okay. All right. You see, the one thing I do like in the script here that they didn't do in the movie, though, is, you know, it would have been nicer if Stewart was actually, you know, blown to bits in the doorway or something like that, as opposed to just having Stewart die with everybody else the same way. You know, in a movie like this, you want to see the bad guy die in a more gruesome way. It's like, you know, Hans Gruber doesn't just get shot. He gets shot, falls out a window, and then ends up falling 40 flights. You know, so it would have been nice.
Yeah, it's almost like it's almost like he should have had the engine, you know, the engine death. But at the same time, I think this does make more sense, at least in terms of their combat ability, because I think it makes more sense that McLean would have been able to overpower John Amos's character and not sure. William Sadler's character, because he is much, you know, he's younger, he's, you know, more physically fit, he is more well trained, and McClane was beaten down hell at that point.
That's true. I think you're right about that. All right. So every Monday we have a segment called McClane Monday, where my guests will give their top five Bruce Willis performances. So, Bubba, why don't you start out with your number five and work your way up?
All right. Let's see. I think for my number five, I will go with The Sixth Sense. And, you know, I think that Bruce Willis is great in that movie. And I'm someone that these days I don't really care about spoilers, but whenever I first saw this, like I had this movie spoiled before I got to see it the first time. So I didn't get to watch it with the, without having the surprise of, oh, he's like, I knew that he was dead the whole time.
That's fair.
But I think it still holds up as a great movie.
The best thing about it is when you know the ending, you're watching a different movie than someone who's watching the movie who doesn't know the ending. You know, which is why on a second watch,
and I think that holds
second
up
watch of the movie, you're looking at it completely with different eyes.
And then my number four, I think I'll go with The Fifth Element. He's a lot of fun in that movie, and it's still an action star role, and again, he's like not the perfect character. He's kind of down on his luck, which I feel like happens in a lot of his roles, that he plays the down on his luck character for whatever reason.
Yeah,
but I love that movie. My number three, I will go with Death Becomes Her. That I haven't seen that movie in ages, and looking back on it, it's almost like Bruce Willis playing against type, even though it is like one of his really early roles. Whenever I was scrolling on IMDb, I'd forgotten how early in his career that movie was, and there's just him playing like, you know, a very meek again down on his luck character, but like very opposite from the action star that he normally plays. My number two, I will go with Sin City.
Why does that not surprise me?
I love that first movie. Yeah, I don't think my
number one. I already know what it is, but it's Glass. It's Glass.
of course. But yeah, Sin City is fantastic, and I cannot wrap my head around how Sin City and Sin City 2 look so much the same, but feel so completely different from each other. And the first Sin City is a great movie to watch, and then the second movie is just a pain to watch.
I definitely agree with you on that.
And then my number one is Unbreakable. I can watch that movie over and over again, and his role is so understated. Like I really just love the slow and intentional pace of that movie from start to finish. Like I think some people might consider it boring, but I feel like it's very deliberate. And everything is done for a purpose, and just the visual of that is so amazing. Like every shot could be made into a comic book, pretty much, which makes sense because it's designed to be like a comic book movie, even though it wasn't based on a comic book.
Right.
It's an original story.
All right, very cool. So, Bubba, why don't you tell people where they can find you?
Sure. Whenever this comes out, I will have, you know, three concurrent podcasts running. So I will start out with my longest running one, which is It's Time to Rewind, which will be on what I'm calling season 5.5, which it's, I'm releasing just one episode a week as it comes out. I have finished my Memento season, which was season 5, and then a spinning off of that, I am going into 50 First Dates, which I'm calling, 19 First Dates, because I counted and there are only 19 dates that we see in the movie, or at least 19 interactions between Adam Sandler and Drew Barrymore. And so that's what I'm covering. I'm doing one episode every Tuesday. And, you know, I feel like it's one of Adam Sandler's better movies. There is some kind of annoying Adam Sandler humor that if you don't like his style of humor, you might cringe at some of the moments. But I think overall, it's a decent movie.
Okay, cool. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. And you can find me on my website, MovieRobMinute.com. Until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay!
Yippee-ki-yay!
If you're fond of sand dunes and salty air, quaint little village.